eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Well, we are back on eatdrinktalk.net and the Eat Drink Talk podcast. I'm with Steve Coombs. This is Rick Redding. We've been having a great time doing this. Steve and I haven't seen each other since like Saturday.
Yeah.
When we did a fun thing. and we've both been doing separate fun and interesting and newsworthy things, right?
I know. Did you ever think there was this much news to cover on the food and drink side?
I'm shocked. I'm driving around town and I'm seeing, there's something new. There's a sign.
Absolutely.
There's something going up that I didn't know
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
And so that's a lot of fun. And I've been sort of stopping and taking note and asking you if you know about it. And
yeah,
and that's the way it's been going.
It's welcome to my world. I mean, it's you can never catch up to it.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome, and a lot of things. It's fun covering this industry because it's all mostly good stuff. You don't have to like do anything negative. We were at the Festive Ale last week, and
that was incredible.
It was just great that we had two separate storms that came in, but in between and during the storms, there was still a lot of stuff going on.
Well, I mean, it was a brand new venue, the yeah. New Albany Riverfront or the amphitheater. It was, there was incredible breezes blowing off the river all day. All the booths were spaced out. It was kind of two level mix. And you could just tell that people loved it. And, the organizers, Todd Antz and Tisha Ganey, they were fielding compliments all day about
yeah.
moving there from St. Anthony of Padua, which is a great place, too. But I think the tiered effect of that was just great for visibility.
Yeah, it really was. And the cool thing is that it so happens that these are back-to-back, but in Jeffersontown, near my house, the Summer Craft Beer Fest is going on this weekend, and it's just as... it's like only its second year, but it wants to be big. Some of the J-Town people were there at the Festive Ale, and they were looking at the venue and saying, "We gotta, our pavilion's not big enough. We got to get something bigger,
right?
Because we want this thing to grow."
And so it was about 1,600, I think they estimated went to Festive Ale.
Yeah, I think that's the number, approximately the number of tickets sold. So in J-Town, they're doing like, I think the number they told me was 800. I'm volunteering over there and pouring beer and I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of fun.
One for Rick, one for
that's right.
One for the visitor.
I get to stumble either down to the Third Turn Brewing Company right next door or home. So that's going to be my
But
thing.
Yeah, I mean, there was some crazy stuff there, wasn't it, at Festival? I mean, there was a lot of very approachable beers, but we had seen, what was it, a peanut butter and jelly mead?
Yeah.
That was interesting.
And
that was really cool, too.
Like one with apple, and I'm developing a little taste, not like you, Steve, but, I like these sour beers that
you did like some of those?
Yeah.
Wow.
Some people sort of turn their nose up at, but the fruity ones, I'm kind of into that. So I've discovered something I like.
A lot of stylistic differences we taste that day. you learn to pour a lot out, that's for sure, because you can't drink everything they give you if you're smart anyway.
That one, I tell you, that you might have some advice for people for going to these things, because they give you some pretty good pours over there. If you aren't careful, you could really get tipsy, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Always try
Goal
to
is
tell
not to. It,
right. Tell them half pour, please. And you probably, if you're wise, you won't even drink half of that. But half of that half pour, we probably tasted. My wife and I, probably 30 different
wow.
beers. So, but that's a lot of pouring stuff on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's also, but I think one of the tips, and we rarely do this well, but photograph a picture of the beer, not the beer itself, but the brand. Of the
yeah.
beer that you like, and then you're kind of taking notes as you go along. You can go back and approach the liquor store and say, "You got this, or can you get this for me?" Because otherwise, you're just—I mean, these are great events. People are in a great mood. They're all friendly, and you don't remember. I don't care how sober you are, you don't remember that stuff because you've tasted 30 different things over the course of 3 hours.
Yeah, it's really a test of, I guess, your palate and your memory.
Drink a lot of water.
There you go.
Yeah.
More good advice that I don't ever take. I did tell you while we're rehashing, though, I have one thing on my list. If you were here in the studio, you would see that Steve has this detailed list of things to talk about, and I have some squiggles. But I wanted to tell you about one of the great openings of in the city that you said you didn't know a lot about is the Taj in Nulu on Market Street. You know anything about that?
And nothing other than what you've told me. So, you know, tell the listeners, because this sounds pretty cool.
Well, I worked with this guy named Mike Maloney from back in the at a company called Iron Max in the early 2000s, and we became friends and all that. And he had this property down on Market Street. He's had it since before then, and always sort of threatened to open a bar there. And it's a perfect spot for it. But anyway, last September, it was like pretty close. They put a sign up, said opening by the end of the year or something like that. And, you know, the joke's always been, yeah, you're never going to open.
Right.
And he didn't. It was last September, and they talked about the imminent opening, and they always said, well, before Derby. And, you know, they missed Derby.
Yeah, which Derby?
Yeah, exactly. So last weekend, they finally opened. I went over there after the festival, and boy, it's just a great, it's like a watering hole. There's not food. They got plans for stuff beyond what's there now, but the way it is decorated, the friendliness of the people, if you're just looking for a place to stop and have a drink, you know,
it's not a place. Cocktail bar per se.
I wouldn't say it's not what you would call fancy, but the funny thing was on the first week that they sort of opened like, okay, we're open, and they didn't even have their distributor bring their stuff in yet. I was joking that they just pulled the stuff out of Maloney's refrigerator in the back.
Yeah, I saw pictures, just like a couple of bottles strewn about. Yeah. Like, man, my collection is better than that.
Yeah, well, Mike lives in a house in back of there, and it's a whole thing. And anyway, the Taj is open finally, and it's quite an addition to the scene in Nulu. When I was there Saturday, there were people walking by and peeking in and looking in, and I think it's gonna, you know, just sort of accidentally be a very popular spot.
Cool. I mean, because it's not cheap to drink in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Galaxy has done, you know, wonders with making kind of a neighborhood bar feel and really affordable stuff. So I'm sure that Taj will be a good addition to that.
Yeah,
that price range.
So anyway, so that's my thing. Let's get started on your list of cool things, because I've got some stuff that I discovered that.
Well, we have this combined list. You want to mention as well about Fubaloo.
I mean, yeah.
And I, among many, you know, want to say Fubaloo, you know, PHO, the Asian noodle dish, but it's fuzz, how it's pronounced. And any word on when they're going to open?
I spoke to Andy Bleeden, and he's going to be a guest on my Rusty Satellite show next week. He is the developer down there. I know you know him. He's a very cool guy, rides his bike to work. And he is developing that entire block. It's right across from Plumber Supply on Main Street. And all the houses like in the block face in, like there's going to be a patio in the middle at some point. But the only one that's got a sign up there is that restaurant.
It's Fubaloo, yeah. So.
And it's this summer. It's imminent.
Saigon street food is how they're billing it. So Vietnamese, I guess, will be the theme.
Yeah, the only thing I ever hear, on the street about Vietnamese is out in my old neighborhood in the South End. Everybody likes to go, what's that place called? The
Vietnam Kitchen.
Vietnam Kitchen.
It's brilliant.
So anyway, so that's coming. That whole area, in Butchertown, he developed Bourbon Barrel Foods. He didn't, but he's a landlord.
That's Butchertown Market Building.
Yeah, the Butchertown Market Building. Yeah. This place called Work the Metal, a retail store
in there. Celador Chocolates is in there.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So I've been there several times to do interviews, but it was great to meet Andy, and he's quite a character. So that's another thing that's coming
very soon. And we had on our list, too, you know, to mention that Danny Mack has a second operation now down at the Millwood Arts Center. He used to have one, was it on Clark's Lane, I believe. It's a pizzeria. Yeah.
And I think I remember, this is the story, we didn't talk about this before, but I remember you, in younger versions of us, introducing me to Danny Mack, and we went down to that place.
That's Clark's right. Lane. Gosh, when we were at pizzamarketplace.com. Yeah, and he moved to Germantown. He's in the VFW post.
I went there once, and, that was a unique atmosphere. It's not fancy. But then he's moving this thing at Melwood, and I mean, you probably know more about that than me. That's a challenging spot to run.
It is. I mean, the Bristol had a cafe there, and La Gala Rosso had a very brief run there this year. I just, foot traffic is not there, I wouldn't think. Maybe he got in super cheap. I don't know. I love the guy. I think he's a just a good down-home regular guy, and his pizza and sandwiches are great. So I hope he does well there. I mean, there's certainly enough neighborhoods around it. There, yeah. You know, it backs up to Crescent Hill, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, if you can pull people in there and let them know it's there. Because, you know, I actually used to work there at Mojo, you know.
Oh, that's right.
We had
that's
an
right.
office there, and, you know, there's not much foot traffic out there. I can speak to that.
So, this week, obviously, we're remembering Muhammad Ali, and I think you wisely sensed that with all the dignitaries coming to town, there are going to be people, important people, in our city's restaurants. I don't think there are. Maybe President Clinton gets flown right back out. I'm not sure.
I'm always interested in that, and you sort of hear rumors in the street, and maybe as sleuthing detectives, we can figure out where people are going, but... I know you said that you're good friends with Vincenzo.
Right. Yeah, I texted him this morning, and he said that the Ali family is going to eat at his restaurant. On what day, I don't know, and I would imagine he has been told not to say that.
Yeah.
But they have a ton of private dining space, and my guess is they would be sequestered, for lack of a better word. Or they eat privately. But,
yeah.
I mean, with all the honorary pallbearers and all these different people, all these names that... or A-listers, or were A-listers at some point. I mean, they got to eat somewhere, so...
That's right. I'm guessing you have some insight as to what kind of a... the restaurateur himself is probably, like, that's a big honor if, say, Will Smith is coming to eat at your restaurant, right?
Yeah, I would say so, sure. Yeah, I would. Is he coming to the funeral? Do you
know? Well, he's one of the pallbearers, I believe.
Wow.
And is not speaking. As we discussed on the Rusty Satellite Show this week, I had John Ramsey, one of the champ's closest friends. Really learned a lot about him, and learned some of the people that are coming. And it's like princes and kings and queens.
No kidding.
From Africa and other countries. So, I don't know that Louisville will ever see the number and quality of people that are going to be in town this week.
You would think it would even exceed a derby?
It could in terms of prominence, I think. I mean,
in terms of true dignitaries,
yeah,
I guess.
I mean, you've got political leaders, you've got people like, Will Smith, who played him in that great movie back in 2001, I Am Ali. You've got like guys like Billy Crystal, who, and all these people from the world of athletics that have relationships with him. And you know, the thing is, Ali planned every, He had a lot to do with the way this thing is worked out and planned. So it's a bigger moment for our city, I think, than a lot of people realize.
Yeah, I texted, the chef of the Oak Room, Nick Sullivan, if there was anything going on there, and he said no, not that he's aware of, business as usual. And Dean Corbett said the same thing about Corbett's, another high end restaurant. Yeah, they're closed. Thursday for Bourbon and Bow Ties, and then on Friday he said he doesn't know. So,
well, that's still
maybe they're all lying and keep it a secret, and they have to. You know,
that could very possibly be. You don't want to. I don't imagine Bill Clinton's going to be sitting at the next table when we go out to Royals Hot Chicken or something. But you just never know.
No slight against Royals for sure.
it's hard to say, but I think the prominence of the weekend, but. I think you should maybe mention something about Bourbon and Bow Ties. I know we're both going tonight, and that's a big fundraiser
for Corsair. It's amazing.
It's sold out.
It's sold out. This is I want to say it's seventh year, and I started following it about 3 years ago. And it used to take a couple of days to sell 800 tickets. Then it got down to 6 hours. Then it got down to 2 hours, and this year. All 800 tickets sold out in 29 minutes at $125 a pop, I think.
Wow.
And it's a big event. And, of course, there are lots of people getting sneaked in behind the curtain. I mean, it's just – it's so cool. And I've written many times, and certainly on Insider Louisville when I was doing work for that site, that this is the event that we need to model a bourbon and food festival after in our town. For some reason, the mayor – and his crew cannot get it off the ground and cannot figure out how to get their arms around it. And here's Bourbon and Bow Ties. If you could find a way to grow this thing exponentially, both in principle, because it's a great fundraiser for Corsair Children's Charities, and just in sheer quality of food and drink, Okay. My gosh. Yeah.
Well, that brings me to a point that I wanted to make somewhere in the show, and here's a perfect opportunity. There's an event that works, that's very successful, sells out, and you're surprised that there aren't like a multitude of people copying that format. And maybe there are, you know. But that brings me to the conversation that I had on my interview this week. You set me up with Chad Coulter over at Luvino. And I think you were telling me that you know, this whole formula of a wine bar in town, it's so successful. He's building another facility. He's building another location out in Middletown. And with the success of, like, breweries and stuff, why aren't there, like, 20 wine bars in this town?
Well, usually the answer to that, after years of covering business, is because people want to do it, but they figure out how hard it is, and they don't do it.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting part of Chad and Lori Coulter's story is the fact that they'd never had any restaurant experience. And they just said,
yeah, we're pharmacists.
They're pharmacists by trade. And they just said, we're going to do this, and we understand our demographic, which they targeted women, and boys, it turned out women. It's got to be, he may have given you a number, but it's at least 70-30 women to men.
Yeah, that's the number he gave me. And you know, that's the thing. That's the thing. I don't understand it. You know, guys like beer and women like wine. Is a generality, but you know, it's true at my house. I don't know. Women just seem to like to get together and drink wine together. You know, and there's always a pack of, that's not the term, but a group of women in Luvino's enjoying their evening.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Plus, it's a small plates restaurant, so that allows them to eat, you know, nibble and nosh if they like to do it that way. I mean, that's dining for ADD people like me, you know. I just want a little bit of a taste anyway, but the wine selection is well done, you know, everything's priced correctly. They just hit it straight out of the park, and now they've got two to open in the next year.
All right, so let's me and you start a wine bar somewhere near them. That might be the thing.
I'm not sure that I want to get into that side of it. I wouldn't mind spirits, but wine, I do love wine, but I like when somebody else is making the choices.
He told me they sold two. They got some Opus in, which is one of the highest end wines. They sold two glasses at $100 a glass, and that was it. So
it's only $250 a bottle. So you know, in retail, if you can find it,
yeah,
it used to be anyway. Maybe it's more now.
Anyway, well, a lot of variety in pricing in wine, I guess.
But, yeah.
But man, you have been. I haven't seen you mainly because you've been on the road. Tell me about some of this cool stuff. You went down to my old college town, Bowling Green, and some other places around the state.
One of my clients is the Kentucky Bureau of Travel and Tourism, and they have just asked me to pick up a lot of work this month, and I get to run around this lovely state and find all the restaurants and bars that are, you know, that I'm able to write about in a very short period of time. Things that are new, as well as throw in the legends. But it'll be about 2,000 miles driven before the month is over, which is a lot. But yeah, Bowling Green and Paducah were two amazing stops that I got to do, and to see these small towns, I mean, they're like 30,000 each, right? They're not very big, and to have the quality of restaurants that they do there, and it's catching on. They're having their little boomlets like we're having our boom here, but probably the stellar visit of the trip was in Paducah. I went to the Freight House restaurant, which is owned and operated by a young woman named Sarah Bradley, and she is the only chef in Kentucky with experience at Michelin-starred restaurants.
Okay.
And that's a big damn deal to have on your resume. And her farm-to-table food was just magnificent. We sat at her chef's table, and the server had actually offered us menus, and we just kind of said, nah, you know, just send it out, chef, whatever you're going
to
do. And
that's the best thing, when you don't have to make a decision. They just bring it out to you, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, she's serious. She served us this amazing this sauteed fillet of Asian carp, which is a species of fish in Kentucky Lake and in our rivers that we don't want. It's an invasive species, and when it's prepared correctly, it is phenomenal. You could have, if I were blindfolded, I would have said it was halibut. It's just that good. So this lady was serious. Two great brand new brew pubs down there, breweries. I mean, where's that money coming from in a small town like that? I don't know, but I'm telling you, they were prettier than anything I've seen around here. That's no insult to the brewery.
Well, when I was at the Taj, one of the partners is Denny Humphrey, who runs the Monkey Wrench, and he was telling me about a couple of new breweries that for out in the state, and one's called White Squirrel, I remember that.
That's in Bowling Green. It was not open the night that I went down there.
Okay. Well, they are trying to get some distribution outside mm-hmm. of Bowling Green. So mm-hmm. that's a big deal for a brewery, and it's good to see all over the state a lot of that economic activity, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, people like beer. It's, you know, kind of the everyman's drink. Maybe not so much at Luvino.
Yeah, not at Luvino. I don't think you can get a beer there. But I'll go all kinds of places with Paula, and we walk in, and they say, do they have wine? And, you know, and you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Some of these, a smart thing by these beer fest operations is to have a little, you know, corner over there where you can get some wine. So
sure.
For people like her.
Sure.
So, all right, well, we're rambling on here, Steve. Tell me what else you got, because we got to get to our guests.
Well, one of the other great stops was the Corsair Artisan Distillery in Bowling Green. This is a distillery that's barely recognized in Kentucky, yet recognized internationally for its kind of daring do, as it were, with spirits. They're rule breakers and mavericks in terms of a very staid industry. Mm-hmm. And they make some absolutely phenomenal whiskeys down there, and gins and rums, and it's an amazing treasure to have in Bowling Green, of all places. Well, it was started in Nashville, and they couldn't distill in Nashville when the distillery was started, so the closest place was Bowling Green.
How long has it been there?
It's been, I first went there 3 years ago, so I want to say 7 years total.
Okay.
But, you know, I left with, you know, three bottles of really good stuff that I'll be sharing. We should be sharing it on the show sometime.
I know. Just to talk about it. We've got to start
doing that. But, yeah, how cool. And that kind of leads me to my guest this week with Brent Elliott, the master distiller at Four Roses. I got to interview him at Cox's Creek, their bottling and aging facility in Claremont, you know, just down the road from Jim Beam. All their distillate is made in Lawrenceburg, but it's aged in Cox Creek. That's kind of a leftover from the old Seagram's regime. That's just where their centralized processes were. But he talks about his first solo release as Elliott Select. It comes out at the end of this month. $125 a bottle, 115 proof, 14-year-old OESK goodness. It is a fantastic. That's the
that's
recipe.
A lot going on there.
Oh, I love it. So it was interesting. The press sample, you know, was from another barrel than we had. The press sample I got, you know, handed to me, was different from the barrel that we tasted, the bottle that we tasted, which is from another barrel, at Cox Creek. And the one down there was just freaking fantastic.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll let Brett talk about that.
Yeah, well, that's coming up, I guess, as we end this portion of the show. That'll be our first interview. And then after that, you're going to hear from the aforementioned Chad Coulter, who I went and talked to at Luvino and learned all this stuff about what they're doing. And really, you know, this isn't really about news, but man, it sounds like his facility in Middletown, which is going to open, I believe, in July, mm-hmm. is really going to be fantastic. It's a lot bigger than the spot they have on Barton
right.
Road, and you know, he's gone from like a pharmacist to a guy that you don't have the guy in this business. They ran those places where you go and paint a canvas and drink wine.
Right,
you know,
they had two of those. Yeah.
So they had those, and then they go to the wine bar, and he'll tell you in the interview there's some regulation that they had to add food, and they didn't really want to, but they did. And so now they got this bigger facility out in Middletown that is, I think it's going to be a spectacular addition to the landscape out there.
It is, and just, you know, we're hoping that they can find enough help, because labor is tight in this market right
yeah
now.
And I don't want to talk about it here, but he talked in the interview about some innovative things they're doing to try
That's
to
right.
get the right people over there.
That's right.
So a really sharp guy, and that's going to be great. So we'll get on to the interviews. I guess we should just for a moment remind people that we'd love to hear from them, right?
Absolutely.
We have our own email set up. It's mine is rick@eatdrinktalk.net, and Steve is likewise steve@eatdrinktalk.net. We're producing news and posting it every day on eatdrinktalk.net. I encourage you to check it out, make it a regular stop. We're we're reporters. It's a media operation.
Right, with words.
With words and stuff.
Just not our incessant babbling.
Yeah. But babbling is fun, and that's what we're doing here. And I hope you enjoy the show. Please tell your friends about it. It's really, we think, a great addition to the media landscape here in Louisville, and especially focused on dining and drinking. Some of our We have a lot of fun doing that.
Absolutely. Favorite things to do.
All right, here's our interviews.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rahm.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Sheriott,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
Brent, it's good to be here today at the Bottling Plant at Cox's Creek. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks for coming out.
So you're a year in now, almost.
Almost, yeah.
Almost a year in. So how's it feel? Have you settled in, or is it just still a dizzying array of stuff?
Yeah, it's still dizzying. It feels more like 2 or 3 months. You know, time's gone by so fast. Like they say, time flies when you're having fun. And it has been fun. It's been busy. It's been a whirlwind.
Now, you said we've been here for about an hour and a half today tasting the new Elliott Select whiskey, and a couple times you had talked about marketing push, about different things that they want. How does that drive some of what you do in the distillery or what you pull out of warehouses?
Really, what I pull out, I always keep, like, for instance, these limited editions, I keep one eye on what the market expects as far as volumes, numbers, that sort of thing. But always the driving force to the primary goal is the quality. And like I mentioned earlier, sometimes I even try to do something different. Almost internally, I want to look for something different to offer the consumer, maybe a different style, limited edition, something different from what we've done in the past.
Right, so you're not repeating things.
So I'm not repeating things. Uh-huh. But I always evaluate these things blindly. So I might make a dozen test blends, and 8 of them are totally different from what we've done before. And then when I look at them blindly and go through, unfortunately, a lot of those sometimes get weeded out, and I end up kind of gravitating back to sort of the same base recipes I always use again and again. They're kind of the tried and true, you know, the K's, the V's. I was sometimes managed to slip some other ones in there. So on my own accord, I'll sometimes try to do something different. I'm no marketer, but just to give something different to the consumers, and sometimes it just doesn't work out just because the profile that I'm looking for, the main goal of what I want to provide, what we want to provide, is smooth, mellow, you know, easy drinking, approachable, elegant, and mellow bourbon.
And that's exactly what this 2016 Elliott Select came out as. And we were talking about that today. Just big mouth feel, a lot of honey, very balanced finish front to back. How hard is that to achieve that kind of a result?
Well, with a single barrel, it's a matter of finding it. There's a lot of difference between a single barrel and a small batch. And as fun as it is to select a single barrel, now that's kind of like the eureka moment. You just feel like you found something good. And there's a lot of good whiskey to find in our inventory.
Right.
When you find a batch, there's enough of it to release as a limited edition, and it's that good. That's just like you find something fantastic.
And kind of the Indiana Jones moment where
you
pull the bung out and light shoots out of the barrel.
Pretty much. Yeah. You were there that day, huh? Yeah, that's about how it felt. And so that's quite a bit different from a small batch. And as much as I love single barrels, you know, there's something to be said about a single barrel because it is what it is. You're tasting one barrel compared to the one next to it. And I think you even come because you've had two of the different barrels. They're remarkably different.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of a symptom of being 14 years old. If you look at a four-year-old batch of barrels, there are going to be some variations because of the wood. But the older you go, the longer you go out, those small variations within the wood are going to have more of an effect on the individual barrels. So at 14 years, you're looking at quite a spectrum of flavors there. Now, they're all within the same recipe, and they're all within the same family of flavors. There's going to be a lot of difference when you go from barrel to barrel or even tier to tier. And even for this one, we had 100-plus barrels that were potential barrels to be used for this, and we narrowed it down to 95. I think it's what we ended up dumping.
Right.
Because some of them just were maybe a little too woody, a little too oaky, low barrels, you know, just off flavors, off characteristics. So if there were outliers, we took those out. But we expect a little bit of variation, and that's in there. But what I was going to say, too, about single barrel versus small batch, with a small batch, that's not so much a eureka moment as a chance to use your craft.
That's different when the batches. Finesse comes in.
Yeah.
And how big is your tasting panel that works on each batch that comes out?
Well, we have a big tasting panel that works on a day-to-day basis, whether it's the distillate or single barrel selections or approvals. For that, with a case like that, it's almost like too many cooks spoil the because with that, it's more of a core group. Usually I do it with some help, and we get down to the final three or four final batches, and then we get some input.
Right.
And hopefully everybody's aligned. And most times they are. I'll get it down to, like, the small batch to three or four test blends that I think are the direction we want to go. And again, usually end up kind of gravitating to some of the same recipes. Now, this year's a little different. I've managed to incorporate a nice OESO in there, but normally it gravitates about the same recipe, close to the same recipes, and then set them out. And I usually have my internal favorite, and usually someone else who's working lab will generally sees it about the same way I do. Usually I'll have top two picks will be aligned, and we'll bring in other people from the tasting panel and get their input. And when things are working well, we know they're going well when everyone's pretty much on board and everyone's aligned with the same.
So it's not as though your vote just outweighs everybody's. If you just say, we're going in this direction and the panel doesn't agree.
It probably would now. In the past, it didn't. In the past, it was Jim who came in and he would say yes or no. And if he said no, it was no. I know, fortunately, you know, I was saying hopefully we're all aligned.
Uh-huh.
In most years, Jim would sit down, like last year, the 2015. I knew we were on to a winner when he sat down. He said, without doubt, this one. It's like, that's how I felt. This is my, without any doubt, this is the first pick. This is the one that I'm happiest with. And we went forward with it. The year before was a different story. The year before.
The 2014.
Right? Yeah, we went through, it was nearly 100 test blends before we got it right. Normally it's, I think last year was low 20s.
How many did you have to go through to produce this release of the Elliott Select? Yeah, I know
you're right. This one, it was, actually with this one there were, we had all the batches set out. Actually set out
because it was single barrel, so it was a little bit easier.
Single barrel,
right?
Yeah. It was down to two batches, and we in 2014 we actually announced that we weren't going to release a limited edition single barrel year after year, just because it's hard to find every year consistently a batch that's of that high quality that has that many barrels to satisfy the consumers. We could put out 2,000 bottles every year, but you're making more people upset than you're making happy when you do that. So,
sure, you can't have it. It's out there, but you can't have it.
Right.
How many bottles did this release?
It's a little over 10,000.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
And 125 a bottle? Is that right?
That's what I've been told. I think it's about 125.
You don't get into pricing. You don't have to, right?
No, not really.
And so there's going to be a fall release as well. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you're probably working on that now. Is that right?
Yeah, I just finalized that. Just a little while ago. Yeah, that's the one that has, there's an OESO, OBSV, and I believe OESK. Have to go back.
And these are
you
all...
think I would know it better than anybody, but actually the recipe starts swinging my head and it's hard to keep track.
And for those who don't know, these are all combinations of mash bill and yeast that Four Roses does, which is completely unusual to do that kind of variety, but that's why it's a fun brand.
Yeah.
When will the first release be available to consumers?
Of the single barrel, that will be in Kentucky... the third or fourth week of June.
So get your pocketbooks ready, people. It's coming. Where it's going to show up, we don't know. So you've got, this is like the busy season. You've got Bourbon Affair coming up next week. You've got Whiskey Live at the end of the week. Then surely there's stuff going on during the summer that I'm not aware of. And then you have the Bourbon Festival in September. Is this the fun time, kind of the Christmas season for you guys, or is it just a big distraction from, you know, doing your daily work?
Well, it's fun, and that's a good point, though, and it is a balance. So I think that's the biggest challenge, especially for me in this last year, is just balancing what has to be done in the lab and the distillery.
Because you did not relinquish your quality control job.
Correct,
that
yeah,
you had
I'm still
when
doing all that.
Jim Rutledge left.
Yeah. And I have a lot of help, but at the same time, you know, if I'm in the lab or in the office one or two days a week, I'm trying to fit in 5 days in those couple days. So that's part of the challenge. And part of my problem, it's all me because I have a hard time saying no to getting out and doing things. Because I love talking to people. I love getting out and doing events, meeting new people. Everyone's just so excited about it. And, of course, I am too. So it's all my fault. They ask me if I want to do things, and I say, well, you know, I shouldn't. But, yeah, go ahead and throw it at me. Yeah, send me there. I'll head out that way.
And is your wife, Amy, enjoying getting out with it? We saw her on the boat, the Belle Louisville, during Derby Week.
Oh, she's having a good time with it. Absolutely. We actually just did the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. Just got back last night.
Talk about that. Is that a standard for Four Roses that they've been involved in? I guess
it's
in its fourth or fifth year. Yeah.
Yeah, we're. It's only the second year that I've done it. But, yeah, we're sponsors of it. And it's a great event. And speaking of family, it's good. My wife has some family down there, so... I pack her up and the kids, and we head down to Atlanta.
Did you pour quite a bit there, or did you do a seminar or both?
I did a seminar. I actually did a seminar on rye. Not rye whiskey, but rye as a grain and why we... I just had some samples out. People got to pick corn whiskey, wheat whiskey, or rye whiskey, and then our whiskey, our bourbon.
And speaking of that, last I asked Jim Rutledge about it, he said he'd like to try it. He would have liked to have tried it when he was there, but there's just too much demand for bourbon. Is that the same still?
For rye whiskey, yeah, that's it. I would love to do it. As you know, our one mash bill is pretty close to a rye whiskey. It's 35% rye.
Yeah.
So yeah, 16% more, and it would be a rye whiskey. So we know we can make good rye if we wanted to. Right now, yeah, it's just every bit of capacity that we have is going for bourbon.
Isn't it a big sticky mess to make rye?
That's what I've heard. It'll be a learning curve for us too. Yeah, sticky and foamy, yeah.
Well, you got this. We just toured the what's going to become the bottling facility here, and it's, what do we say, it's 79,000 square feet.
Yeah, it's big.
And we could have played a football game in there, people, and had multiple teams.
With a crowd.
Exactly. And the current bottling facility is not even 2,000 square feet.
It's tiny.
That's got to be exciting.
Oh, it is exciting, yeah. We're seeing growth everywhere. We're doubling the size of our distillery. Growth here, adding warehouses. So, and all this growth, it's all attributed to the growth in the U.S.
Well, speaking of growth, this guy's a family man, and he's got a daughter at home that's having a dress rehearsal for her dance recital, right?
That's right, yeah.
So he's going to have to leave us, and we thank you for giving us some time today on Eat, Drink,
Hey, thanks,
Talk,
Steve.
Red. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Garcon, I think I'll have another.
Today, Eat, Drink, Talk is in Luvino, right in the Highlands on Bardstown Road with Chad Coulter. Chad, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
I'll tell you, this is an amazing place. I know that I passed by it a bunch, and there always seems to be a crowd in here.
Yeah.
Tell me how long you've been open and where the idea came from.
We opened actually about 2 years ago, so okay. July of 2014. The idea really stemmed from a previous business that we had, and that was called Uptown Art.
Okay.
Uptown Art is it was actually the first paint and sip business.
Oh, yeah.
In Louisville.
I know those businesses, yeah.
Yeah, so we had the first one on Bardstown Road, and then we opened, and that was in 2011. We opened up a second location in New Albany, right across the river there. And we just saw how much wine people were consuming. And we were just going through cases and cases and cases of wine. And we looked around, and we're like, wow, there's no wine bar, really, in the Highlands or really even in Louisville. So it kind of stemmed an idea. And the concept was born just from our previous business.
Well, it's amazing because I understand you and your wife were... the ideal way to get ready to own a restaurant is to become a pharmacist, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was the normal path.
But you seem to have, I mean, if you go through pharmacy school and get that degree and get those jobs that are nice, why would you give that up for this?
Yeah, great question. Actually, me personally, I got into the pharmacy world in order to own my own pharmacy. So I was interested in both the science aspects as well as the business ownership, entrepreneurship, with insurance reimbursement rates, not to bore you about that today, but they're on the decline. So it's very hard to make any money in the independent world of pharmacy these days. So Uptown Art, which was our first business venture, was very... low threshold to get into that, low amount of money that you needed to build out that space. And we did that, saw how much wine people were drinking, and it just kind of led to the restaurant industry. And not because we were drawn to the restaurant industry, but more we just saw an opportunity that we didn't feel like we could pass up.
Well, and this place is sort of, you know, I guess the concept that people think Luvino, they think wine, but... Yeah. You went out and hired a really great chef that I just met, Tavis, and small plates.
Yep.
I mean, it seems like, why didn't somebody think of this before?
We funny enough, we actually just wanted to be a wine bar when we first kind of thought of this concept. And with the alcohol laws at the time, you had to be so many feet away from the other person. And we found this space, but it was close to another bar. So it's like, well, we have to do food. But in hindsight, I'm so glad that we did.
So it was a reason to start having food.
Yeah, I know. It was really due to the ABC laws at the time, which actually changed the month that we opened, funny enough. So we just wanted to be a wine bar. But in hindsight, so glad that we did it this way. When wine goes, you're supposed to eat with wine. I mean, they accentuate each other. So wine is meant to be, eaten. You're supposed to eat while you're supposed to.
And that's what most people do. And, you know, I've noticed the times I've walked by here and been in here with other people, you have a decidedly female customer base, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it about the women in wine that...
I don't know.
I mean, this must be the best place in town for girls' night out, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's I don't know if that's because we were drawing a lot of our Uptown Art customer base, which is probably 95% women, to Lubino when it first opened, and it just kind of continued that way. But, yeah, I really just think the style of dining, which is the small plates,
mm-hmm.
The vast wine selection, it just kind of screams female. I don't know. We have a fair number of date nights and males, but we don't get groups of males like you would at a sports bar.
I can't think. But we coming in here with a bunch of guys. But I mean, I'm sure you could. But
yeah, we have that. But you know, probably 70% of our clientele on a given night would be female.
Okay, 70%. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
If guys hear about that, they'll start coming in here. And
yeah, 100%.
But it's so successful. You're expanding, and I think that's a very exciting part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
For people who don't know, tell me about your newest location out in Middletown.
Yes, so new location, which will be opening mid-July, so within a month or so. It's in Douglas Hills, so it's at the corner of Blankenbaker and Shelbyville Road, right behind the Republic Bank and Mark's Feed Store on Main Street.
Okay.
So we've got an 8,500 square foot building there that we are building personally. We will occupy about 4,300 square feet of that, which will seat about 100 with another 40 in the private dining room and another 50 on a really nice outdoor patio.
That's a lot more ambitious than this. What we'll say, this little place here on Marsdown Road.
This little place holds about 75 to 80.
Yeah.
But on some Saturday nights, we'll have 2.5 turns, so we'll have 200 people in here.
Wow. Why did you choose Middletown? And again, you're a pharmacist, but now you're in the building business.
Yeah, yeah, and we actually, when we were looking at a place for our first location here on Bardstown Road, we looked at the old, I think it was like Scissorhands, the old barbershop, which is now a spa. We looked to rent it, and our real estate agent said, well, that one's taken, but this building is actually for sale. So we purchased this building, got into the commercial real estate situation. But our mortgage for this space, which includes us, the building that Stout is in, and three apartments above the retail spaces, more than paid the mortgage.
Wow.
So it made sense to us. And after seeing how much money we were spending at Uptown Art on landlord and rent, and you know, they've gotten $300,000 in the last 5 years.
Now, have you gotten out of that other business, the painting?
Yeah, we sold it in November to a couple in Cincinnati, and so they are taking over they've already taken over the operations and are looking to maybe add more Uptown Art locations in Cincinnati and around.
Well, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, and maybe I'm just looking at things, but like, there's a bourbon surge, there's a beer surge, there's a wine surge. It seems like there's a lot of drinking going on.
Yeah,
there is.
And again, kind of the reason that we wanted to get in the wine thing is we looked around and it's all bourbon, all craft beer, and those are having their resurgence and huge growth right now.
I was talking to a guy about this the other day, like your place, people aren't coming in to get like crappy wine. You know, they're getting like really good stuff here.
Yeah,
right?
we spent months, literally months, and I know it sounds like a real good job, but it actually is very hard to taste all these wines. And I mean, you're not fighting with distributors by any means, but you're trying to get the best deals because you want to have that wine in your place. And the winemakers and wineries, they want to have by the glass pours, and so they'll typically give a better price.
Sure.
For you to do that. So we get we get really good deals on our wines, and because we're pushing them a lot.
Yeah,
and we well, give pass me an idea of the consumer.
For somebody that's listening that know the range of pricing.
Yeah, range of pricing. Our minimum charge for a glass is $8.
Okay.
And it goes up to a glass of Camus, which will be $29. We brought in Opus 1 here about a year ago that we did by the glass for $100 a glass.
Wow.
Because it cost us, you know, over $200 for the bottle. So,
you sell any of those?
We sold two glasses of $100 glass and a couple of bottles that we sold. But we want people to try a bunch of different wines, so we have wine flights as well. Those are all named after famous Kentuckians. So we have the Jennifer Lawrence flight.
Well, she's right here on the wall.
She's right here on the wall. And those are the bubbly, beautiful wines. So those are all three sparkling wines. And with each flight, you get 3 2-ounce pours. And so people can try 3 different things. Sorry, people are setting up in the back.
Restaurant noises.
Yeah, restaurant noises.
Well, the only other portrait I saw here is Ali, and you know this is, you know, there's a lot of people in town for Ali's funeral and all that.
Right,
so what wine goes represents that?
Yeah. So yes. Our Ali flight are those the big, bold and wines that pack a punch. That's kind of how we describe them. So those are your big, complex, fruit-forward, just knocking in the mouth type of wines.
I think that's what that's what I'll be having when I come here at Lovino. One last topic I wanted to touch on, and one that it's sort of a business question, but you're growing, you're having more employees, more staff, and it seems like you're taking a sort of innovative approach to compensation, at least in terms of benefits.
Yes. So we were pretty worried about how we were going to staff the new location. We're not going to be that, you know, we're not a River House or Ducks Cantina, but we're a pretty good size. So we took an innovative approach. We advertised on Facebook and Craigslist. We offered a $600 sign-on bonus paid at 60 and 120 days after hire. It's up to a $600 bonus. So kind of depending on their work ethic and all that, you know, how motivated and driven they are, what their skill set is, kind of be based on what we pay them for that bonus. Okay. And then health insurance as well. So we will pay 50% of a individual's health insurance if they sign on full time with us.
Very nice. It is very nice. And the last thing, we'll wrap up this, but you know, the one thing is, you got all these wines. You got to have somebody behind the bar that like, knows something about wine, don't you? I mean, how do you find those people?
We've very coincidentally, actually, but we found people that had just interest in wine, and we invest in them and help them grow their knowledge by giving them incentives to get their sommelier. Either we have a couple people with their level one, a couple people with their CSW, and we're trying to get them to get their level two and maybe even further, and you know, just other tests they can take and certifications that they can get.
Yeah, because you got to be ready to suggest something for people like me that don't know how bad wine is. Tell me what I want to have.
Yeah, and we do a lot of training. Before each shift, we're pulling out one or two wines to retaste with the staff, educating them on you know, the differences between this cab and the other cabs we carry. So it's a constant education.
Wow, very
teaching.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Chad, it's been great visiting with you here at Lovino, even with all the ice in the background.
right. Sorry
it's
about
all
that.
Fun.
Sorry, listeners.
It's real ambiance.
Yeah, it is.
I know it's loud. It's really loud in here at night when all these women in here get talking. Right?
Yeah. Friday and Saturday night, once they have a couple glasses in them, it gets a little crunk.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.
Dessert? Yes, please.